See if we can get this mic situated. Good morning. I want to appreciate the opportunity to be up here to present a message from God's Word this morning. I appreciate the visitors for all being here. I've seen a few of you. It's nice to see y'all. I appreciate having some of my friends here to hear me this morning. I feel bad for y'all because you have to hear me if you didn't plan on coming to hear me, but it'll be all right. I have a special appreciation, and my family will laugh at this, for keeping things simple. Don't like to overthink things. I like keeping things simple and applying them to a broad amount of people. So that's kind of what we're going to go through this morning. One of these sermons is something that hopefully everybody can take something from, use it in their lives to better serve God to the best of our ability. This morning, we're going to be looking at a few things that I think Christians, you know, sometimes struggle with, whether it's on different levels of they're okay with looking at these sins and they're sometimes okay with having them in their lives, or maybe they don't realize they're committing these sins. Ever since, you know, Moses came down from Mount Sinai and they had the Ten Commandments, they had the law that God gave them. Christians, you know, people that follow God kind of have been trying to wheel and deal a little bit, trying to stretch it, trying, you know, whatever they can to push that limit, that's okay. And we do that today. You know, we look at murder, killing somebody. Oh, that's terrible. If it's a capital offense in the United States, then it's probably a pretty bad sin altogether. So we look at that, and that's one of the worst sins, you know, cheating on your wife. That's just one of the worst sins that you can do. But when we draw the line at those are just terrible sins, that means that on some level, there's a little bit less sins that we're okay with. So we're going to be looking at those this morning. I'm going to give a note. I'm going to mispronounce a lot of words. I tried to be smart and put Hebrew and Greek definitions, so I'm going to apologize for all the mispronunciation. But we'll jump into it. The first one we're going to look at this morning is gluttony. Gluttony. The Hebrew word for this one is zalal, means to shake in the wind, you know, to quake, figuratively to be loose morally or worthless. The sin of gluttony, you know, when we hear it, our mind specifically goes to food or drink or whatever it is, but it's about a lot more than that. I appreciate the prayer and the songs this morning. And one of the songs, Pure in Hearts, one of my favorite songs. I love that song. And most all of these we're going to be looking at this morning is a matter of the heart. All of these sins is a matter of the heart, our mindset, our thoughts, our actions, what we're deciding to do. Excessive food and drinks is normally the culprit, but they're not the only ones. This sin is about the attitude of overindulgence, to not have our mindset, not have a limit for ourselves. You know, all of these things could be considered, you know, watching movies all weekend, just going through and, you know, Netflix binging, or sitting on the couch just snacking, eating chips the whole time, being lazy, not doing what we're supposed to do, whatever it is. There's a reason that, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas, those holidays are only one time a year. Our bodies, our souls, we're not meant to sit there and overeat, overindulge. All these different things, just sit there and keep stuff on our face. We're not meant to do that all the time. Our body is a temple. We have to take care of it. 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 and 20. Or do you not know that the body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, from whom God, and you are not your own? You were bought at a price, therefore glorify your God in your own body and your spirit, which are God's. We're told in Proverbs 23:21 that the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber with clothes a man with rags. Like I said, this is about so much more than just eating and drinking. If we're sitting there and we're lazy, we're not doing what we're told to do. You know, the Bible tells us to be workers, be doers, go about our lives. Whatever we do, do it to the best of our ability. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. That's what we're told to do. We're blessed in this life by God so many ways, in so many ways that we often overlook a lot of them. And one of them that I think we tend to overlook a lot is our bodies. God blessed us with our bodies, and we're supposed to take care of them. We're supposed to do everything that we can to treat them the right way. I'm not saying it's bad to eat dessert. Take a look at me. You know I love to eat. It's not bad to eat dessert. It's not bad to relax, you know, sit there, watch TV on the couch, recliner in bed, whatever it is, or sleep in. Those things aren't bad. But it's when we take those things so far that we allow our relationship with God to be hindered. You know, we go out, we party Friday night, Saturday night, we have our friends over, we, you know, go to a concert, whatever it is. And Friday night, Saturday night, you know, we had a great time, but then we wake up Sunday morning, oh, I'm too tired. You know, I went too far Saturday to where I can't worship God Sunday, so I'm just going to stay home and watch the live stream. Or, you know, I'm not feeling too great, I'm going to sleep in and I'll go to church that night. Something like that. We have to do our best in everything that we do to worship God to the best of our ability, keep our relationship number one in our lives with Him. The next one we're going to look at is lust and pornography. And this is one that you might think that, you know, hey, a lot of people, they struggle with this one. And you'd be right. They do. The first word, lust. The Greek word for lust, one of them is epithumio. It means to set our heart upon, that is, long for, rightfully, or otherwise. I want to take a side note here for a second. So many of these sins, they are sins. There's negative context, negative connotation with these things. Lust, there is a rightful way to lust. If you are in a marriage relationship, you have the husband, you have the wife, there is supposed to be lust for each other. You're supposed to have that in that relationship. That's the whole point of marriage. Have that relationship, want the husband wants the wife wants the husband, whatever it is. That's the rightful way to lust. But the second that we turn our eyes away from that marriage relationship and, you know, break that bond that we have, that's when we run into the problem. So lust can be right or incorrect, whichever way you look at it. Porn. Porneu, how do you say it? The act of harlot, that is literally indulge in unlawful lust of either sex or figuratively practice idolatry, commit fornication. One could very easily make the argument that today in our society, in our culture, in the United States of America, every single person who watches TV, we have a problem with pornography. I mean, watch commercials for 2 minutes. You'll see something you probably don't need to see. All websites out in the world, one third of them are pornographic in nature. One third of them on the entire world. So if we sit there and we realize, okay, watch commercials, one third of the websites out there deal with this problem, there's probably somebody around us statistically that's dealing with this. And as the old saying goes, you know, love gives, lust takes away. If we're lusting after somebody for, you know, our own personal wants, our own personal needs, then we're going to have a serious problem. Think about porn for a second. When I say porn, most all of our heads, probably mine as well, probably go to, you know, the idea of whether it's nude photographs, whether it's the act of two or more people actually indulging in sexual activities on camera, pictures, whatever it is. That's what most people probably think porn is. And you'd be right, but that's classified as hard porn. I want to think about something for a second called soft porn. That, my personal opinion, I think that we struggle a lot with more in today's society. Soft porn can be lots of different things, and it can affect different people in all different ways because everybody is different. It can range from anything of, you know, pictures of females in bikinis to men with their shirt off, or, you know, women in tight clothes, men just doing an everyday activity. It's whatever it is, it's whatever somebody finds attractive. Merriam-Webster defines pornography as this: the depiction of acts in a sensational manner so as to arouse a quick, intense emotional reaction. Porn doesn't always have to be pictures, videos, whatever it is, naked people in doing things they shouldn't be doing, having sex, whatever it is. It doesn't always have to be that. Different people struggle with different things, and there's a lot of different ways that people can struggle with this. A lot of people in life, They if they struggle with this, they go through the same things. They deny it, you know, they're like, hey, this, it's not that big of a deal. It's not hurting anybody. It's not like I'm out there committing murder. I'm not doing these things. You know, this is just something that I have to deal with. Nobody even might know that they're dealing with this. This is one of those things that you might have no idea that somebody's dealing with this problem. And a lot of people will say that. Flip over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Now, while we might think that there's nothing wrong with, you know, saying, oh, hi, that person, you know, they're attractive. They look good in that outfit, or, you know, I think they're hot, they're sexy, whatever it is. We might think that there's nothing wrong with that because we're not hurting anybody. Matthew 5, verse 27. You have heard that it is said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Reading this verse, these passages, and knowing human psychology, just how human works, or ins and outs of our brains, a lot of people tend to think that it's only men that struggle with this. And I would tend to agree most times. It generally is men who tend to struggle with this sin more than others. But not all the time. Genesis 39, if we go back to the Old Testament, we'll look at an example where this is a female, a woman, who is struggling with lust, lusting after a man. Genesis 39, I'm sure most all of us probably know this story, but we'll go over it context real quick. Joseph, son of Jacob, coat of many colors, brothers hated him, sold him into slavery, all the different things. Genesis 39, we see that Potiphar comes into the story. Potiphar is the captain of the guard of Pharaoh. Potiphar bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites, and he brought him down to Egypt, placed him over his house. Joseph was a very successful guy, and Joseph was successful. He was a young guy. He looked pretty good. He had a good-looking face. He, you know, pretty good shape. And so one day, Potiphar was out doing his job, and Joseph was over the household, is what his job was. It was just Potiphar's wife and Joseph. One day, Potiphar's wife, she looked at him, she lusted over him, cast her eyes upon him, is what verse 7 says. Cast her eyes upon him and wanted him, wanted her to lie with him. So she tries to get her to lie with him. Joseph, smart decision, gets out of there, gets out of the situation. Story goes on. Verse 12, happens again. She is with him, alone, another time they're alone, grabs him, yanks him, just pulls him into bed, trying everything she can to be able to be with him. Joseph did the right thing, you know, he got out of it. It says that she yanked his garment off, and as we continue the story, we know, you know, she keeps the garment, lies to Potiphar, gets Joseph in big trouble. But the key of the story is Joseph got out of there. He did everything he could to get out of that situation, and that's what we have to do today. Whether it's, you know, we're starting to look at a website we don't need to be looking at, or watching TV, watching a movie, and, you know, sex scenes pop up, whatever it is. Whatever situation we have, get out of it. Do what you have to do. Do your best to be able to serve God. Get out of that situation where we won't be tempted. Pride. Pride. The Greek word, huperphenia, however you say that, literally means haughtiness. Merriam-Webster defines haughtiness as this: blatantly and disdainfully proud, having or showing an attitude of superiority and contempt for people or things perceived to be inferior. Thinking too much of oneself is a sin that, in today's terms, doesn't even bother people anymore. I mean, we're told to be proud, be proud of ourselves, told to have, you know, it's just called high self-esteem, high self-confidence. You go in there and you know that you can get the job done, high self-confidence, do what you need to do. That's what we're told to do. People tell us to do that all around. God tells us otherwise. Everything we do in this life needs to glorify God, not glorify ourselves. End of story. Everything we do needs to glorify God. One of the worst kinds of pride that I think that we struggle with in Christian societies is false humility. You know, moping around all the time, you know, saying, look at how not proud I am. Look at how could I be proud? I'm so humble. I have all these problems. These are my problems. You know, how could I be proud since I have all of these things wrong with me? Everything that we need to do, be focused to God. It's that self-hyper humility, whatever you want to call it. It's still hyper-focused on self and not God, and it's going to rob us just as quick as regular pride will. Pride's a terrible thing that a lot of people struggle with. It's human nature to care about ourselves. It's how we're made. Care about ourselves, put ourselves above others. God tells us not to. God tells us put others above ourselves. Mark chapter 7, if you'll open up there. Starting in verse 14, Jesus starts talking about what defiles a person. What in life defiles a person, makes them who they are. We'll start reading in verse 17. When he entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. So he said to them, are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him? Because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods. And he said, what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. It's our hearts. Purify my heart, oh God. Pure in heart. That's where our problems start. That's what's going to defile us, according to Mark chapter 7. How we feel, how we act, what we do, where our thoughts are, what we say. All these things, that's what defines us, that's what defiles us. If we have a terrible attitude, you know, get mad all the time, let our emotions control us, then we're going to have a problem. Only care about ourselves, get jealous, want something else, look at somebody in the wrong way. We're going to have problems. These verses that we just read list a bunch of sins that we struggle with as humans, as Christians. That's how it works. I don't know about y'all, but I don't necessarily want to be associated with anything on this list. We have to make it a priority in our lives to be conscious, to always put God first, look to God in everything we do. My parents are going to laugh. I always hated this growing up, And, you know, don't tell them they were right now that I'm older, but they were right. So growing up, my parents always said whenever something bad happened, whenever it was a temptation, I was really angry, I was upset, I was trying to lash out, whatever it was, they say, stop, that's the devil trying to get you. And if you're a kid and you're really mad about something, and you're trying to rant to your parents, whatever it is, and they just say, stop, that's the devil, what are you supposed to do? I used to get so mad. But they were right. I mean, that's what the devil does. He's trying to get us all the time. 1 Peter 5 tells us, you know, he's a roaring lion out there waiting to devour us, doing everything that he can to get to us, cause that separation between us and God, because that's what sin is in our lives. It's a separation between us and God. Everything he can do, he's going to do it. If we practice self-control, have the right mindsets, look to God in everything we do, put God first, set our wants, our wishes aside, put God's want and wishes first, we're going to be fine. Whether it's pride, lust, gluttony, whatever sin you want to put in that list, fill in the blank, put God first. End of day, that's what's going to matter. Murder. Greek word is phoneu, however you say it. Kill, do murder, slay. That one's pretty simple, a definition. We all know that one. Go ahead and flip to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount. There's a lot more to murder than we think. This section is one that a lot of people struggle with. I would argue that most all people struggle with this one. Murder. Matthew 5:21 says, you have heard it that it said to those of you of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest he deliver you to the judge. The judge hand you to the officer, and then you be thrown into the prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you'll be by no means get out of there until you have paid the last penny. When we hate somebody else, when we're angry with somebody else, Jesus tells us, murder it in our hearts. Fortunately for us, in today's society, if I'm mad at somebody, if I've murdered them in my heart, I'm not going to go to prison because we haven't actually murdered them. But there's a prison around our heart. There's a barrier in that relationship, whether it's, you know, between husband and wife, whatever it is. If you don't have forgiveness in that relationship, friend to friend, whatever it is, that relationship is going to be severed. There's something between that relationship. If there's forgiveness, we cannot continue in our lives. Verses 23 through 26 is the hard part. It's the forgiveness side of this sin that we're going to have to deal with. For us to walk in forgiveness, we have to look closely at 23 through 26. We're told, you know, before we can be forgiven and be in heaven with God, we have to forgive whoever we have a problem with, whatever it is. Whatever problem we have, whatever situation has come up, we have to go to that person and make it right with them first before we can be accepted into heaven. Something I want to make clear about all of the sins that we've looked at this morning is there's a way to beat all of these sins, I guess you said. There's a way to not deal with these sins, and that's self-control. If we practice self-control, have self-control in everything that we do, then we're not really going to have a problem with all these sins. There'll still be temptations, but if we can control ourselves, we won't have to worry about it. If, you know, sitting there and there's a nice TV on, or the show on the TV show, or, you know, Star Wars is on all weekend, you want to watch, sit there and watch all the movies, Harry Potter, whatever movie franchise you like. If you want to watch all the movies back to back to back, but there's things you need to do. If we have self-control, hey, look, I can really watch those movies whenever, when I'm not busy. I need to go cut the grass. I need to do this. I need to do that. Whatever it is, have self-control. If there's lust or pornography in our lives, if we're having that problem, if it's a one-time problem, everybody makes mistakes, pray about it, move on. But if it's something we continuously deal with, we have to practice self-control. Self-control in everything we do. Whether, you know, we see somebody out in public, they're wearing something they shouldn't or should be wearing something they're not, whatever it is, or whatever situation we put ourselves in, get out of the situation. Have self-control like Joseph did. Whether it's, you know, we're angry with somebody. If we're angry with somebody, control ourselves. Don't let us lash out. Don't try and cuss them out. Don't try and get in a fight. Don't try and do whatever you need to do. Control yourself. Everything that we can do, if we have self-control in our lives, work on it, try to practice the master of self-control, we will succeed in so many different things in our lives. There's a reason self-control is talked about in Galatians chapter 5. Galatians 5, talking about, you know, works of the flesh versus works of the spirit. Galatians 5 is listed there. 5 verse 19 says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, which I told you beforehand, as I told you in times past, that you practice such things, you will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such, there is no law." Every single one of the four sins that we've talked about was listed either by name or in multiple ways in that passage we just read. And this last one that we're going to look at this morning is also listed in there as well. Idolatry. Idolatry, the Greek word for idolatry is idolatria, is I guess how you say it. It means image worship, literally or figuratively. This one is one that a lot of people struggle with that they might have no idea that they're struggling with. I don't know about you guys. I don't necessarily have a carved image to a Greek god or a Roman god or an Egyptian god or whatever sitting in my dining room table and I pray to. I don't have that problem. Most of you probably don't either. That's just not how our culture is. But idolatry, like all sin, it's a matter of the heart. That's what we're getting at. It's all a matter of the heart. If we serve someone or something else, put them above God in our lives, they have become an idol to us, whatever it is. It can be anything from sports to money to people, whatever it is. Around here, we love football. We love football. It's the culture in the South. I love Alabama football. I'm at the top of the list. If that's a crime, sue me. I love Alabama football. So growing up, we planned our Saturdays completely around when the Bama game was on. If Bama was on at 2:30, hey, we would do something that morning or that night, but we can't miss the Bama game at 2:30. Just how it was. That's our culture around here. That's how it is. In the South, we love football. Just think about how excited everybody gets about football. Just take a step back and think about it for a second. Funny story here at Eastside. I'm not sure how much y'all know about, you know, college football or college football playoffs, but there's a committee that comes together, a bunch of people talk about the different things, and they pick the final four teams that play for the championship. And normally there's, you know, a few teams that stand out, pretty obvious choices. Well, this past year, nobody had any idea if Alabama was going to get chosen. And I see a couple smiles in the auditorium. You're going to get a laugh out of this. But there was a group of us over in this corner that we had no idea. So the committee was choosing what teams were going to be in. And that show was on from like 11 to 12, and they were making the decision by 11:30. So church normally gets out about 11:15 or so if Mr. Steve doesn't talk too long. And so we got out about 11:10, 11:15. 11:20, they make the final announcement. So all of us Alabama fans, you know, we're gathered in this corner. I'm not going to say names, but somebody pulled their phone out. We were watching the show, and we had no idea what was going to happen. We're all so excited. We're sitting there talking about it, everything. When Alabama finally got picked, all started freaking out, jumping up and down, screaming, high-fiving, hugging. We were so excited. Everybody else in the auditorium was laughing at us, probably Auburn fans scattered around. Yes, I'm throwing shade, by the way. Anyways, so we got so excited about Alabama getting picked to be in the college football playoffs. We were so excited that joy came over us. Do we ever get excited about God in that way? Do we ever just have that joy just bursting forth? I'm so excited for whatever it is. Something about God that we get so excited, we're high-fiving, jumping up and down. That's just great. Do we ever have that kind of self-reward for ourselves? If we get so excited about sports teams, you know, all these different things, sports teams, just having a chance to play for this trophy that in the end means nothing, then why would we not get excited about having a home in heaven with God? Matthew 22, verses 37 and 38. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment." We've got to love God first, always. Always have God first in our lives, period, end of story. I'm not saying that it's wrong to care about and be passionate about certain things in lives. That's great. We're told to do that. But it's when we care about those things that when we let them take over our lives and let them become between us and God, that's when we're going to run into an issue. It can be anything from sports, our favorite college teams, pro teams, whatever it is, to, you know, our kids' sports games, whether it's, you know, all-stars, missing church, whatever it is, all these different things. It could be something about money. If you're having money problems, that you're worried about money, what you're going to do, worried about trying to make the most money as possible, fill in the blank. The one that's tough is the people in our lives. It can get very touchy. You know, people, we love people in our lives. We care about them, their family. We think we have a responsibility, and most times we do have a responsibility to take care of those people. Sometimes to fulfill those responsibilities, we have to miss church. We have to, you know, let that come between our relationship with us and God. We have to do, like I said, again, it's all a matter of the heart. Family, loved ones, best friends, whatever it is, if we let those people determine our relationship with God, let them, their actions, what they choose to do, whether it's health problems, whether it's they're just choosing to live their lives wrong, whether what, fill in the blank. If we let those people affect our actions, affect our relationship with God, they're an idol. It's just plain and simple. If we put them above God in our lives, they're an idol. And we can't have that. And it gets very touchy because emotions get involved and all these different things because we love these people. We care about them. That's great. Sometimes that person that we're having problems with, you know, whether it's we feel like we need to miss church to go check on them, you know, or there's maybe that they're living lives the wrong way and they kind of pull us away from God, whatever it is, if we let that person affect us, we're going to be in serious trouble. Sometimes that person can fend for themselves. If it's a family member who is sick or someone that you don't, you know, they're having a really, really bad day, you don't feel like you can leave them, in reality, for an hour and a half, if they live, you know, close to church building, an emergency, you call them, but probably you can still get to church. I'm not saying all the time, but probably you can still get to church. Whatever it is, that person can probably fend for themselves long enough to where you can still have that relationship with God. And it's important that you make that known. Make it known that, hey, look, I love you. You're super important to me. But God comes first in everything. And like I said, people in our lives, we get emotions involved, and it gets very, very tricky. But having God first, putting God first in everything we do, that's what matters. Our last passage this morning is Revelation 21, verse 8. Revelation 21, verse 8. You can read it off the screen, you can flip there either one. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. This morning, we've taken the time to look at a list of sins that we might not even realize that we're committing. Or if we know we're committing them, we might slightly be okay with it on some level. We might know that we have a problem, but we might just not want to deal with it, or maybe we're too scared to ask for help, whatever it is. We might say to ourselves, I'm not hurting anybody. It's not like I'm actually going and, you know, sleeping with somebody else, cheating on my wife, husband. It's not like I'm actually going and, you know, physically murdering somebody. I'm angry. I'm upset. It's a matter of the heart. Whether or not we're physically or mentally or whatever it is, committing these sins, sin is sin. It's still a separation between us and God. There's something in our hearts in the way between us and God. We've seen this morning, we've got to be careful. Even though we're not physically doing them, we're still going to have problems with them if we're doing them in our hearts. And the problem is we might not even realize we're doing them. This lesson this morning is for everybody, you know, has a heartbeat, has a brain. You can make your own thoughts, own decisions. That's great. This is one of those ones that most everybody is probably going to struggle with in some way or another. I'm at the top of the list. When I was going through, when I first wrote the sermon a year or two ago, I was, you know, stepping on my own toes. I might have struggled with if not all of these at some points or very often in my life. And I think as Christians, as humans, we all do. That's temptations. That's how it works. We need to set our pride aside. Realize, you know, hey, we're humans. We're Christians. We're not perfect. That we need to make our lives right with God. Whether we've, you know, like I said, made one mistake, make it right. If we continue to have problems with it over and over and over again, ask for help. Ask for help from your friends. Ask for help from your family, your spouse, whatever it is. Fill in the blank. Ask for help. Do what you need to do to make your life right with God. And the great news is, God loved us enough that because we mess up, He knew we would. He made a way for us to be able to have a home in heaven with Him even after we mess up. begin to make our lives right, that, you know, we love God enough, put Him first in our lives, that we have a way to set that sin aside. And sometimes the hardest thing for people is to admit that they've messed up, admit that they've made a mistake, admit that they have a problem, and ask for help. That's the hardest part sometimes. In life, we have to do the hard things. We have to do the hard things, otherwise we're not going to grow. We're not going to become the best versions of ourselves, and that's just how life works. We have to fulfill our full potential. Do what we can do to serve God to the best of our ability. And if we let our pride in the way and can't ask for help, can't admit that we've messed up, we're going to miss out on home and heaven with Him. Maybe there's someone here this morning who struggles, who is in the need of prayers, or needs help in any way. If there's anything that we can do, then please come forward as we stand and as we sing.